Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Burt's Books podcast. I'm a bit excited today because I was saying to Michael earlier today that I feel like I've been building this up for a while. But we've got Reverend Rach with us. Reverend Rach, hello.
Hello. Yeah.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, your last three weeks you've mentioned not coming on the podcast. Yeah. So it's been very exciting.
I'm trying to persuade other people to join us, and I knew that you were coming, so it just comes up naturally. How are you? How have you been?
Yeah, good. I went on holiday last weekend, so that was lovely.
Where did you go?
To the Isle of Wight. So I got on a ferry, spent some days by the seaside, came back again. So...
Lovely.
Yeah, and then back at work, and which is all the random ministry stuff of life and death and church, really.
So much like a bookshop.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, pretty similar. Yes.
And has it been an okay week at work?
It's been quite a big week at work. I had my final interview to decide whether they'll ordain me in the summer, so that's been very important. We're getting all the ducks in a line to get to that point. It's kind of... Otherwise, all the normal things, getting ready for Sunday and all those bits and pieces.
You told me a fact this week that I have found quite amusing, and I want to find out more, that some Christians don't say hallelujah during Lent.
They don't. It's
why?
Because it's a word of celebration, and so some people fast from it in the same way some people fast from chocolate. They're fasting from using that word. And so when you say it on Easter Day, it's bigger and more exciting because it's not been said the whole of Lent. Because it's a word that we used to talk about Jesus coming back to life on Easter Day. And that's why some Christians don't say that word.
Are you one of
Lent.
Them?
I've sung it at least twice because I picked a hymn accidentally that had it in it early on. I'm not that bothered by it, but sometimes I try and see if I can manage not to. We sometimes call it the A word when, because you can be with an A or a H.
Oh, I see, right, yeah.
But yes.
I was like, hang on. Have I been spelling it wrong?
No, you can spell it both ways.
Okay. Yeah. So, books then. What books. Sort of books do you like to read?
I quite enjoy...
The Bible.
The Bible, obviously, yes. Love the Bible, you know, it's got fascinating things in it. Otherwise, a big fan of some dystopia stuff. Also, general women's fiction kind of things. I love a good girl meets boy, and boy fall in love, something massive happens.
Yeah.
It's all okay again. Quite enjoy boy meets boy or girl meets girl too. Yeah. Like, you know.
The sort of story where... You've got a main character, you know they're going to meet somebody, you know they're going to fall in love, you know it's going to have a happy ending, but how does it get there?
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, that is, I read quite a lot of those. I've been trying to mix and match it so I don't read too many of those in a row.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because sometimes you just forget who's who. Yeah, so, yes. And I quite enjoy it when it's not got the romance side, but some of the friendships and multi-generational stuff. So a bit of a mix and match. I'm actually reading some non-fiction at the moment, which is unusual for me. So,
is it the one about the chickens? Has Michael sold that to you?
No, he didn't sell me that. He told me enough facts from it that I felt like I'd read enough. But I'm reading Hayley Morris, Me Versus Brain.
Okay.
So she does the TikToks.
Yes.
I thought after reading the books I'm going to talk about today, I thought I needed something different, particularly before this podcasting, so I didn't... Get confused and talking about the wrong book. It's like, oh no, I'll read something completely different.
Now, I'm going to potentially confuse you then, because I'm not going to ask you now about this book.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you, because you recently read The Appeal.
I did.
And you liked that.
I loved The Appeal, yes. And I read it in like 2.5 days.
Is that usual for you? Like, is it like a week a book?
I think I normally give myself 2 or 3 weeks a book.
Wow.
So
to read it in 2 days.
So to read it in 2 days, yeah. So there's a bit last autumn where I was really struggling to read. And so I really got into... what did I read then? There was something that I read in like a week and it was like, oh, good, I'm back into reading. And it was at that point you recommended The Appeal because it's written in emails. It's actually really easy to pick up because you've not got to commit to a whole chapter at a time.
Yeah,
you can just read a couple
read
of pages.
Read as much as you want.
And then you're like, you're so involved and so into these characters and you just panic that maybe you're too like some of the characters. There was one in there that I was like, oh, am I too like her? That really scared me. And then trying to work out whether I'd be a murderer or not was quite a bit of a brain.
What did you settle on?
I am not a murderer.
Not a murderer. Excellent. Just alone with you in the shop. I thought I'd better check.
Yeah, it's my new method of how to get more funerals for work, is to murder people in the first place.
I mean, there's a plot there.
It is, isn't it? That, someone should write that book.
No, because we don't want evil vicars, do we?
No,
that's your,
we don't want
that's
evil
your bugbear.
Yes. The amount of books I've read that have had evil vicars in, like, I've not forgiven Michael for the one that he's got in his book.
Yes.
And he wrote that before he met me, so... Yes. Oh, yes, we'd like some nice, good vicars. That would be nice in books.
What book are you going to talk about today?
I'm going to talk about Heidi Stevens, Same Time Next Year.
Excellent. So, I know Heidi. Well, we both know Heidi.
Met Heidi.
Heidi is a friend of mine, and she has come to the shop a few times and done signings.
Yes.
And this is her fifth book, I think.
Yes, I think so.
And she's been releasing maybe one or two a year for the last couple of years. So she's got her side job. Well, she's got her main job, and then this is what she's doing on the side.
Yeah.
And she's sort of getting bigger and bigger with every one, which is really good news. Because I'll be honest, I've only read one, which was the Game Set Match. The reason I read that is because I was in the acknowledgments, so I thought I'd better read it.
Yes, indeed.
I am also in the acknowledgments of this one.
Oh, are you?
Yes, but we'll talk about that when we talk about the book.
Sensible.
Also in the podcast today, me and Michael will be talking about 14 Days, which is, I was about to tell you who it's by, but it's by pretty much everyone. It's got, it's about 28 different authors, all from the American Guild of Writers or something, but it's edited by Margaret Atwood, and it's essentially a novel, but I mean, we discuss this, we discuss whether it can be a novel or not, but it's a set of short stories, loosely tied together to form a larger narrative.
Ah, nice.
I say it's just a set of short stories.
Spoilers.
Michael comes down on the side of novel. but you'll hear the full arguments for and against coming up on the other side of this music. I am going to tell you about 14 Days.
Yay!
Which I don't know why I'm going to tell you about it, because you've read it.
I have.
So this is 14 Days. It features, well, loads of short stories essentially, but it's a collaborative novel.
It is.
I'm going to list them all.
Okay.
Featuring, ready, Charlie Jane Anders, Margaret Atwood, Joseph Cassaro, Janine Capo Crusette, Angie Cruz, Pat Cummings, Sylvia Day, Emma Donoghue, Dave Eggers, Diana Gabaldon, Tess Gerritsen, John Grisham, Maria Hinojosa, Mira Jacob, Erica Young, Celeste Ng, Tom Orange, Mary Pope Osborne, Douglas Preston, Alice Randall, Caroline Randall, Ishmael Reed, Roxana Robinson, Nellie Rosario, James Shapiri, Hampton Sides, R.L. Stein, Off of Goosebumps, Nafissa Thompson-Spires, Monique Tron, Scott Turow, Louis Alberto Uria, Rachel Bale, I don't know how to say that one, Waika Wang, Deshaun Charles Winslow, and Meg Wolitzer.
Lovely. What a list.
What a list. I don't know most of them.
No, I'm not familiar with all of them.
The names
I am familiar with, I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah, Margaret Atwood, wow.
Yes, R.L. Stein. Yes, please.
Amazing.
John Grisham, good un.
Yeah. Emma Donoghue.
Yes. Yes. And Dave Eggers, amazing.
Yeah, Sylvia Day, she wrote all the sort of E.L. James type porn.
Yeah, she did. I was
curious about that one.
Yeah.
So, what is this? This is basically, it's billed as a collaborative novel.
Mm.
Let me read you the blurb. 1 week into lockdown, the tenants of a run-down apartment building in Manhattan have begun to gather on the rooftop each evening to tell stories. With each passing night, more and more neighbours congregate, bringing chairs and milk crates and overturned pails. Gradually, the tenants, some of whom have barely spoken to each other before now, become real neighbours. 14 Days is an irresistibly propulsive novel with an unusual twist. Each character in this diverse, eccentric cast of neighbours has been secretly written by a different major literary voice. I nearly, very nearly, started singing the Neighbours theme tune.
Don't sing the Neighbours theme tune. So I think what I want to emphasise with this is the beauty of the word secretly in this one.
Yes. So there is... I nearly didn't make it past the beginning of this book.
Okay.
So you open it up and you get a note from the Authors Guild Foundation, and it starts with, "You are holding in your hands a novel that is both singular and extraordinary." And then that introduction goes on for like 5 pages. And I was like, stop this.
Just get on with it.
You don't need an introduction telling me how great a book is new book.
That's fair.
Like an introduction on an old book, fine, fill your boots. But don't start blowing your own trumpet now.
That's fair.
So I nearly gave up. But basically, you read this,
And
it's basically they all gather on the rooftop and tell each other stories, don't they?
Yes, we've said that in the
yes.
blurb.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
But as you're reading this, you don't know which author has written which bit.
No, and that's the really fun bit of it. You're kind of going.
I think it's more fun if you know more of the authors.
Probably. I was definitely looking out for the ones that I knew and kind of going,
I wonder if. Yeah. Yeah.
There's only one I definitely got.
There was one. There was only one that I even took a guess at.
Yeah.
And I was completely wrong.
Okay.
I thought I'd worked out R.L. Stine.
Yeah.
And I was
Wrong. It's not what you think it's going to be, is it?
It's not the one.
No.
So.
Because there is a list in the back as well saying who did do which ones.
So
if you are curious enough, you can look.
It does say. But... So a little bit more on the structure of this. Mm. So it starts with day one and the superintendent of the building. She is new to the building.
Yeah.
And she has gone to the basement of where she's basically living.
Yeah, yeah.
And the previous super's sort of notes and all of his possessions are there,
yes.
including a Bible that refers to all the tenants of the building.
Yes, none of whom are given a proper name.
None of whom are given a proper name. So they become known as some of them, I guess, 2C. There's Eurovision, who's a man that likes Eurovision.
Yeah, the Hello Kitty.
Vinegar.
Hello Kitty.
Yeah.
Hello Kitty.
So then it starts out like they start going up onto the roof, and it starts with only a few of them, and more turn up. And across day one, it's one of them sits down and says, "I'm going to start telling you a story."
Yeah.
I'm going to try and see if I can find... There's quite a bit from the point of view of the super to start.
Yeah, that's sort of like the setup and the linking is her opinion, isn't it? Her viewpoint.
Yeah. But then there is... I think the first one to talk about is the 9/11 story, isn't it? Because I think they start saying, "Oh, this is a lot like... a bit like 9/11, because obviously that, I mean, it's set in New York, so that's quite a big thing. But they're talking about like big things that happened to the city. And one woman said, "It's fresh. It touched all of us, including my family, even back in Santo Domingo. You lost someone in 9/11." The lady with the rings asked, a challenge in her tone. "In a weird way, yes. How so?" And then there's like a chapter, not chapter break, but a paragraph break.
Yeah.
And then it says she took a deep breath. And then it goes into the story. And so then you've just got like a monologue from this character. And that's kind of how the stories are told. So you get two or three stories per day in the 1 hour that they're up on the roof.
Yes, because you're only allowed out for a short amount of time, aren't you, as well?
Yes.
And it's also a thing, it's very much a class-based thing as well, that sort of in New York, anyone who can afford to leave New York has gone.
Yeah.
These people can't afford to leave New York, they're stuck there. And like the super has to run this building. I think one of them's a nurse, isn't she, as well? And she's obviously the front line of the COVID pandemic. Yeah. Really, really interesting. And the super's an interesting character as well, because you sort of get, like, say, you get the introduction and get the gist of who she is, but you don't actually really, really find out
more
her backstory
later,
until about the, one of the last days.
Yeah,
really.
So her story is kind of interspersed, linking all the other little individual short stories. What did you think of it?
I really liked it. I know I liked it a lot more than you did. I liked the concept of having... I just like anything that's a bit of a crossover, really. And all these authors coming together is just really cool. As with all collections of short stories, I don't think there's a single example where this isn't true. Some are definitely better than others. There are some that I read and went, I'm not fussed by that. But some are really good.
You have just put your finger... on exactly why I didn't like it as much as you. Because you've said, as with any collection of short stories, this is a collection of short stories.
It
is not a collaborative novel.
No, it's got the connecting link of it all, which I think is probably Margaret Atwood and Douglas Preston.
I think it's just Douglas Preston.
Douglas Preston and that one, yeah. Because they're the two who have edited the whole thing as well, so make it cohesive. But so there is all that, but at the core of it is a bunch of short stories.
It's a bunch of short stories. There's a very sort of tenuous framing link around the fact that loads of people are locked up during pandemic. But the stories are not related to that.
No.
And then, like, the sort of resolution of the pandemic bit of the story, the end of these 14 days, is
just like massively signposted. Yeah, and I would have liked to have thought that one of these 28 authors who are all, you know, very prolific might have said, is this too obvious? It kind of didn't need it.
I didn't care. I still liked it.
See, I just think...
I cared. You know what I mean.
I'm just not that impressed by 28 authors getting together and writing 28 separate short stories and whacking them in an anthology. Then one guy's written a very loose linking narrative. It's not as clever as they think they are being.
Maybe not. I think we'll have to agree to disagree on this one, because I
liked the stories. Not going to say I didn't like the stories. I enjoyed the short stories. I had similar problems that I have with... I mean, I'm putting this in the subscription boxes in February. Because it is still good, but it is short stories.
Yeah.
And my issue with short stories is I read one... Okay, I was going to read for an hour. I can read another one.
And
I just feel like I'm overloading with different narratives.
Yeah.
Whereas I think short stories are better if you just dip in and out. So this isn't a novel, despite the fact that they're trying to sell it as one.
Yes.
I would like to see a collaborative novel where it's like one of them writes a chapter and then the other one picks it up, or they each write... I don't know, maybe not 28 different authors, but you could sit and write a novel from six different characters' points of view, all six characters being written by a different author, and telling a story that way.
Yeah.
I would like to see that.
Then may I suggest to you The Floating Admiral?
There you go.
Which is...
God, I know what you're going to say.
You know who's in it.
Yeah.
It was created by the Detection Club in the 30s, I think, and a different detective author of the time wrote each chapter. Agatha Christie did one of them, because of course.
Of course.
But the premise is that they write a chapter, and then the next one picks up the next chapter, writes the next chapter, but has to obey everything that's happened before and come up with a solution. So by the end, there are... And I think at the end of the book, it does tell you what everyone was planning on it being.
Yeah.
That's
a collaborative novel.
Yeah, yeah.
This is an anthology of short stories.
Yeah.
So I think it is still good. If you like short stories, you should buy it. If you're not a fan of short stories, this isn't for you.
I don't know. I would still call it a novel. Because I think, much as yes, there are short stories in it, I don't know. I think
when 90% of it is a short story.
No, I know.
It's 28 short stories linked together by another short story.
I know it is, but I don't know. I'm happy to call it a novel.
You don't get to know the characters often some of the stories are, I'm going to tell you a story. This happened to a friend of a friend of a friend of a brother of a friend.
Yeah.
And it's like nothing to do with the character that's telling it.
It's true.
It's just, it almost feels like, I'm going to pick on somebody at random. I'm sure it's not the case. But somebody like Margaret Atwood has approached, I don't know, Tommy Orange. And said, we're going to put a load of short stories into a novel. We're going to do a collaborative novel. Can you write something? And then he's gone, yeah. And then the day before the deadline, Margaret's rung him up and said, oi, Tommy, have you got this book? Bit? And he's gone, yeah. And then just dug out a short story that he'd written 20 years previously shoved it in.
Maybe that's what they are. They're just sort of short stories, ideas they all had, and went, I can't do anything full with this.
Because it's not a novel. No. It's a short story collection.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm on a slight rant because I did enjoy it.
Yes.
I feel like it's kind of... They've tried to missell it a bit.
Okay.
And I think it would be... It's a very good example of a short story anthology.
Okay.
But you don't enter a giraffe into a camel show and expect the giraffe to win.
What a phrase.
It's available to buy at firstbooks.co.uk. It's time for my favourite part of the week, and that is, of course, the bestseller charts. We're going to start by looking at the top 10 books in the whole country, with thanks to Nielsen Bookscan's Total Consumer market. As always, for the last few weeks, we are stripping out the World Book Day books. This bit week actually covers World Book Day week, and the titles that were in World Book Day sold something like 400,000 copies between them. But I always take those out because they are given away essentially for free by booksellers. And let's have a look instead at what the top 10 best-selling books actually are once you take out those World Book Day books. So we start at 10 with a new entry, The Trading Game by Gary Stevenson. At 9, down 3 places, is The Trial by Rob Rinder. We're going on an egg hunt by Martha Mumford. That one always seems to crop back up. It was published first back in 2016, but it is starting to crop back up into the top 10 as we approach Easter. Heartbones by Colleen Hoover is a new entry into the top 10. That's at 7. The Housemaid is up 4 places to 6. One Day is at 5. And Homecoming by Kate Morton is at 4. Leslie Pierce's Betrayal is at 3. A Death in the Parish by Reverend Richard Coles is at 2. And it is a second week at number 1 for Lisa Jewell, And None of This Is True. Now, I think we've seen the sort of, I say we've seen the last of the bubble of One Day. We're seeing that both editions sort of start to fall down. However, you combine their sales, they would still be number 2. Hasn't quite made number 1 just yet, but he may do in coming weeks. That is, of course, David Nichols. I didn't say his name before. Let's now focus our attentions on the more important chart, and that is the best-selling books in Swindon. So we take all the best books that are sold in Burt's Books. We ignore the World Book Day books. Didn't quite sell 400,000 of those, but they still sold quite a bit. And we're going to start at number 5 with Sometimes People Die by Simon Stevenson. That was a near book club pick last week, and its sales are still going strong. In Memoriam by Alice Wynn is at 4. She was our book club pick, and again, people still picking that one up. Rainbowsaurus by Steve Anthony is another one that is in the chart this week, was in the chart last week. He's at 3. But we've got a new entry at 2, Gwen and Art Are Not in Love by Lex Croucher. This is our LGBT book club pick. And at number 1, thanks to an event that we had with the author yesterday. So this is a local author. She's published by HarperCollins, and it's her debut thriller. Eleanor Barker White is at number 1 with My Name Was Eden. Now, are any of those going to still be at number 1 next week? Or are they going to be in the charts next week? There is only one way to find out, and that is by listening to the Burt's Books podcast. So, same time next year.
Same time next year.
Well, instead of waiting for next year, tell me about it now.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, it's a book written, and it tells a whole story of a whole year. I'll read the blurb. That's probably the best, isn't it?
Okay.
Sisters Belle and Marie are poles apart. While Marie is a free spirit who spurs alcohol, casual sex, and material possessions, Belle needs all these things just to make it through to lunchtime. When their mother dies suddenly...
Sex before lunch? Crikey. Sorry, carry on.
When their mother dies, you know, just to bring it down a bit, leaving them a rundown house in the Norfolk coast, they are unexpectedly thrown together because there is a condition. Before they can inherit it, they must live in it for 1 year together. Marie invites some old friends to Orchard House to form a working party, and Belle is drawn to the devastatingly handsome yet silent and brooding Nick. The only problem is they want entirely different things. If Belle can make it through the year unscathed, she'll consider it a success. But that means dealing with everything she's been sweeping under the rug for decades. Could it be time to leave the past behind? And in doing so, will the sisters finally find their way back to each other?
Ah.
Yeah.
So this actually, although we were saying before, you like a story that is boy meets girl, girl meets girl, whatever.
Yeah.
This doesn't quite sound like that, a little bit more complicated.
It's quite like that.
Oh, okay.
But it just starts with sister's mum dies.
Right.
So a lot of Heidi's other books start with relationship breakdown or something, and this is, yeah, mum dies.
Is it told from the point of view of both sisters or just one sister?
It's mostly from Belle's perspective.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. So you get a lot of Marie in it, but it's very much from what Belle's seeing and experiencing and her year. So yeah, and it's a fascinating story. And I find it really interesting because I happen to like read it in comparison to what was happening in my life at the time. So on the Tuesday I started reading it, I'd just come home from a funeral, which I'd led. Like,
yeah, not yours.
Yeah, not my funeral, not someone that I was that I really knew. So, and then the first chapter's at Awake, and it was just really odd to be like, I've just been to Awake, and now I'm reading about Awake.
How does that, I mean, slightly off topic, how does that, sort of dealing with sort of the highs and lows of life, how does that impact you when you're reading fiction? Does it change the way that you read? Like, have you been at a funeral all day, do you like, I'm going to read a nice, happy book this week?
Yeah, it was definitely I've been at a funeral, I want to read a book.
Right, okay.
And I knew I was reading this one next. I hadn't quite, as much as I'd read the blurb and I knew it was about a mother's death, I wasn't quite expecting the first chapter to be right, like...
Boom, funeral.
Bam, we're Awake on a canal boat. So a little bit different to the one I've been to. But yeah, it does...
Yours was on a canoe.
yeah, exactly. Very different. But yeah, so it's that... You know, sometimes it's really helpful to see our own lives in our book, in the books we read, isn't it? And sometimes it's really nice to escape to something completely different. So yeah, and then later on, it's all based on the Norfolk coast and they're at the seaside. And I was reading it while I was on holiday in the Isle of Wight at the seaside.
Oh,
so
okay.
There was quite a lot of it that I was like, oh, this is quite like what I'm experiencing. And sometimes, you know, I read something in a book and think, oh, I'll give it that a go. So I went swimming twice on my holiday. And... You know, there's a lot of... I did not go swimming in the sea, but this book has a lot of swimming in the sea as part of what they do. So that was all quite nice parts of it. The same way that like I first started knitting because I read some books about a knitting shop and thought I'd give that a go.
Yeah.
So, you know, books do inspire me to do things. I have to be careful what I read.
Let's not go too far down the crime route.
definitely dangerous. But really... Yes, there's a whole storyline about Belle and Nick, but actually it's the story of Belle and Marie.
Yeah.
And how they kind of come back together as sisters, because they grew up together. They're less than a year apart, so they're in the same school year, so they grew up very close.
Irish twins, they call that, don't they?
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
That's a fun fact. I didn't know that. I like that. But yeah, so... And as the book started, they, you know, they're very different, so they didn't always get on, and then they're in their mid-30s now, so they spent 17 years or so together and then 17 years of not really meeting up and communicating and odd times they connect. But so this was a real, like, wow, you've got to be back and living in a house together after...
So is that why the mum did it then? Like, she's like, I want my daughters to reconnect.
I think so. Like, they didn't know the mum was dying.
Okay.
So it's all a bit of a shock. And they're not sure. Like, they think they assume she must have known she was ill, but...
I could say she was ill, died of an illness?
They don't, like, it's a, whether it was a brain aneurysm or something.
But right, okay.
It was kind of drop dead.
So she didn't know she was going to die?
No.
Right.
But the girls didn't know that this house existed. They didn't know that they'd had grandparents until recently. Like, there's a whole bit of story about actually reconnecting with family and what it means to move back to a place that their family is from that they've never been to and didn't know about. So there's, and the whole story really is about building family and connecting. And it was a fascinating journey through that. One of the things I found really interesting was that how do you split what's a spoiler and what's a content warning?
Okay, yeah.
And I'm going to try and do this without giving any spoilers. But there's the kind of halfway through twist is something that I would have chosen not to read if I knew that's what was going to happen.
Right, okay.
And so it was really fascinating. And saying all that, I loved it and I enjoyed it and I thought it was done really well.
But if you've known it, you might not have read it.
Yeah, no. In the kind of books I come to you saying,
yeah.
But can you recommend me something? You wouldn't have recommended this for me. And
So I think say it. Say why I wouldn't have recommended it.
Because it is a pregnancy storyline, and I do my best to avoid pregnancy storylines and brand new babies. And this one, the twist halfway through is Belle gets pregnant.
Right.
And the second half of the year, that's the main thrust of the book. Storyline.
Okay.
And yeah, so I've been using Storygraph. I was one of the people who downloaded it on the 1st of January and it broke their system and they had to get a new server.
Excellent.
And you can say on that, actually, I want books that wreck with this, and I want books that definitely don't I don't want those things. And so this is one of those books that, yeah, had I known what was in the second half,
I wouldn't have read it.
I'm glad I've read it. I loved it. I really enjoyed it. I thought it handled it well. I didn't find it as difficult as I thought I might have done. But it's that really interesting twist of actually, how can you prepare yourselves for a book when you don't know? And so this kind of style of book does have that. You know kind of the intro stuff, but you don't know the second half and what that's
going to... Like we said before, you don't know the journey of how they get there.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Mm. Do you think that then you would be more willing to read books with that content in, knowing up front that it was there? Or are you still thinking, no, I enjoyed this, but I'd still rather not read about it?
Yeah, I think I'd still avoid it generally.
Yeah.
It was fascinating because I was about halfway through and I was telling my husband Matt where I was up to in the book and what was going on. He was like, oh, do you think it's going to be a pregnancy storyline? And I'm like, oh, I hope not. and then I'll just have to read. So I read the next three pages and there still wasn't a hint of it. Well, there was, but I hadn't clocked it.
Matt had clocked it
from what I'd said, but not what I'd read. And so I was like, oh, no, I'll put it down. Next morning, I read two more chapters and I was like, you were right. Absolutely was. And then we had this conversation about if I'd known from the start, would I be more prepared or actually...
Yeah.
Because sometimes you hear, you get the content warnings and then you're panicking the whole time through. It's going to be this horrendous thing.
And it ends up being not as big as you had thought.
Exactly.
Build it up, don't you?
Yes. Yeah, so that was a really interesting kind of thing I pondered while reading this book that actually, it was something I probably would have avoided, but actually I thought Heidi handled it really well.
Good. So one of the reasons why you A, picked this book up and B, wanted to come and talk to us about it on the podcast was because you've read all of Heidi's books?
Read all of Heidi's books.
Heidi fan.
I am a Heidi fan, yes. I like the fact that they're all standalone. You kind of... Because sometimes you want a book that's in a series and you get to know some characters, but this actually is I'm going to get to know these characters, I spend a lot of time with them, and then
leave them.
And then, they can have a happy life if you don't write another book about them. Because if you write another book, something disastrous has to happen again.
That's it. You do think sometimes when, even Richard Osman in the Thursday Murder Club, you've got these four people running around solving crime, and then they solve a crime and everything's good again. Yes. And then you're sort of like, okay, but you're bringing out another four books, so you know that somebody else that they know is probably going to die, and that's a bit I sort of want to leave some of these characters to have a nice few years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah, so I read Heidi's books out of order. I read The Only Way Is Up, which is her third one, first. I think that was, you were promoting it in the shop, and so I was like, oh, I'll give that a go, and I really loved that. I then read 2 Meters From You, which is the first one, which was written in COVID, about being in COVID. And it's so surreal to read that now, in the new normal or whatever we're in now.
My sister read that just after Christmas this year. And her sort of bit of feedback was, because it was written during almost the first lockdown and set during the first lockdown, there are bits that we now know then happened that don't feature in that lockdown.
Yeah.
And you sort of end up... You think back on lockdown as being a one thing, and we all wore masks, and you couldn't get books in the supermarket because they were all taped off and all of this. Yeah. And actually, they all happened at different times. So when you read a book that's set just during one part of it, you're like, well, where are the masks? Well, they didn't come until later.
Yeah, that book is totally pre-mask. And it's like, this is weird. Because it was purposely fitted in the first 100 days, I think, of COVID.
Much that didn't happen that we weren't doing at that point.
So that was really fascinating, and quite nice to look back on, but also you kind of remind you how glad we are that we're not living in such an intense pandemic time at the moment. I then bought Game Set Match as soon as it came out. That was the time I met Heidi, got it. That's a signed copy. In my head, that's the tennis one. I definitely read that too close to another book that was too similar.
That is the tennis one, yeah.
That is the tennis one, yes. But I read another book that...
Featured tennis.
Didn't feature tennis, but came out... I read it at that same time, and that was when I realised I had to be careful about not putting books next to each other.
I do that, I think. But not... Maybe because I've been doing it for so long. Maybe I don't do it sort of intentionally. Yeah. But I often think about, well, what am I going to read next? Yeah. Oh, well, I'll read that one, then that one.
Yeah. Yes. Part of the reason I read The Appeal the weekend before I read read this one was so that I'd got a gap between that and what I'd read before it.
Because I was ready,
like,
for this, yes, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a, the appeal as a palate cleanser is a strange idea, isn't it? Yeah, just read a murder mystery. Yes.
I quite often say a nice crime is a good palate cleanser if you've read like a heavy literary book.
Yeah.
It's a nice little palate cleanser. Yeah. Get a few murders. You know that it's not going to go too deep into the meaning of life or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's
just, absolutely. Yeah. Yes. And then I got Never Gonna Happen for my birthday most recently. So I read that over Christmas and really loved that. And then got the same time next year.
So how does this stack up with the other four? Is it your favourite?
It's not my favourite because of the pregnancy storyline. I still think The Only Way Is Up is still my favourite.
Yeah. Still good?
Still good, yeah. I would still recommend all five of her books. I've really enjoyed all of them. But and the others all start with a relationship breakdown, whereas this one is starting with the death of a mother, so it's a slightly different starting point to jump off from.
I do need to read it, again, because I, as I said before, I am in the acknowledgements of this one, sort of. So it says, huge thanks to my ride or die mates, my tennis girls, my Eurovision, and Strictly WhatsApp support crew. I am the Strictly WhatsApp support crew.
Nice.
That's our little WhatsApp group, Heidi, and a few of our mates.
Oh, that is an exciting group to be in.
Yeah, it is. And it goes all year round because we're just...
Nice.
Suddenly in June, somebody will spot one of the dancers and go, look, who's doing this?
Oh, nice one.
Yeah, and then we have a spreadsheet.
Of course.
Because we have a competition that tracks who we think's going to win and who we dish out points on based on how close you are in terms of who gets evicted each week.
Wow.
So it's a serious thing.
Serious.
Yeah. I mean, Heidi joined last year. It's been going nearly 10 years.
Wow, yeah. So I do love Strictly. It's my kind of deadline on a Saturday to get my sermon written so that I can watch Strictly.
Yeah. Okay, good. Okay. So what is your next book? So you're reading the non-fiction one at the moment.
Yes.
What do you think is going to be your next fiction book? Is it going to be the one that Pedro sold you?
Yeah, Pedro just sold me one the other day. Michael sold me one about 3 weeks ago. I've still got Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow on my list that I really want to read. What else is there? Yeah, like I've still got a couple of birthday books. And my birthday was back in November because I got so many books for that. And then I read all my Christmas books at Christmas and then this came out and... Yeah, so yes, I'm not sure yet, actually. I like Sally's idea that you kind of wait and see what speaks to you.
Yeah.
So I kind of have to put them all out and see what.
Which
one's next. Yeah. Yes.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. So we've got Same Time Next Year by Heidi Stevens. It's available to buy at burtsbooks.co.uk. So that is everything for this week. We have we've talked to Reverend Rach about Same Time Next Year. I have spoken and argued with Michael about whatever it's called, 14 stories, 14 days. I can't remember. It's the Margaret Atwood one.
They've just heard it. They know.
They know. You know. You don't need me to tell you. And we've obviously listened to the charts, and we know exactly who the best-selling books of the week are.
That is the most exciting part, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the best bit of the week. I normally have a bit of a guess as to what might be on there, even if I just have that sort of thought with myself.
Yeah.
I've got no clue this week, because we've had one really busy day and one really, really quiet day.
Yeah.
So I think it was Wednesday. Mm. Where we just had barely anyone in the shop all day. We sold quite a lot. We didn't even sell coffees. Nobody
came
out on Wednesday. I mean, it wasn't great weather.
I was busy. I didn't go
you
to the shop.
Here.
So no one.
We didn't sell much on that day. But I do know that, LGBT Book Club, that we had that on Monday night, just gone. Yes. We spoke about the swimming pool library, which I may talk about in the podcast in a future episode. I might not. I like Alan Hollinghurst. He's got a new one coming out later this year, so I'm hoping to get a proof of that. So if I get a proof of that, I might just sort of combine my swimming pool library review into that.
Nice, yeah.
We also picked our next LGBT book club title, and we've gone for Gwen and Art Are Not in Love, which is about Guinevere and King Arthur.
Nice.
But they're both gay.
Yeah.
or at least gay leanings. But they end up hating each other and then they realise actually there might be an ally ship there. So as I only know that from the blurb, so I haven't read it yet. But I think that will almost certainly be number one on the pillar. I don't know quite what else is there, but everybody else who's listening to this does know.
They do know, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's exciting. I quite like this mystery.
Yeah.
If you are listening to this and you are thinking, do you know what? Rev Rake seems to have had a lovely time.
Have you had a lovely time? I've had a lovely time.
Well, you better check that. And you want to take part in the podcast, you can email me, bert@bertsbooks.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, @bertsbooks, or just pop into the shop and say, Bert, I want to be on the podcast.
That's what I did.
It's what you did. And I will either say yes, or I'll say no, or I'll say, who are you? But yes, I will probably say yes. Always looking for some more people, because then I don't have to pay Michael.
Yeah, I only cost a hot chocolate.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. Also, email bert@bertsbooks.co.uk if you have anything else you want to say about the podcast, you want to say about the books that we've spoken about, you just want to tell us about the books that you've spoken about. That's also the place to go. I think that's everything. Oh no, one more thing. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe to the podcast. That way you will never miss an episode. Now that really is everything. Do you have anything else you'd like to say, Rach?
No, I think we are good to go.
Excellent. Right. Say goodbye, Reverend Rach.
Goodbye, Reverend Rach.